Oh, hello there, guys. I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over the pop culture we all love to love. I am here in New York in some sort of weird shared workspace that I rented a office at, but over in LA to talk TV, music, film, and anything else entertaining, our digital strategist, Winter Mitchell.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. And academic and DJ, Oliver Wang.
Hi, Guy.
Hello, Oliver. And Margaret Wappler is off, I assume, penning a heartfelt album of singer-songwriter folk guitar. So instead, we are joined by my friend and contributing writer to Vice magazine and many other online publications, and a very funny stand-up comedian, Megan Beth Keister. Megan, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Guy.
Why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
A little bit about myself?
Can put you in context.
I'm a 31-year-old divorcee. I'm childless, and I sleep in a closet.
Yes. Also, an avowed bisexual.
Indeed.
All right. Every week, we start the show by taking questions from a listener about our own pop culture tastes. This week, I want you to tell me who would be your dream Pop Rocket correspondent. Oliver.
I went with low-hanging fruit, which would be Jay Smooth, who I think, I mean, to be quite candid, when Jesse Thorne and the folks at Max Fun originally conceived of this program, he was sort of the kind of person that he had in mind, the problem being that Jay, of course, is based in New York, and we really can't convince him to move out to sunny California. But, I mean, Jay has, in terms of the insight, the humor, and, you know, a good radio and video presence, he's got the whole package. So I think Jay he reigns the platonic ideal of what we strive for here at Pop Rocket.
I honestly think of you as the West Coast's PhD, Jay Smooth.
Is that because we both have receding hairlines? Is that what you're going to say?
Yes, actually. Winner, who would you like to see as a Pop Rocket correspondent?
Oh, Sean Young, the actress.
Oh. Why?
She's actually one of these people that I think about often in the whole, like, Hollywood world, because she had like this meteoric rise, and then some that weird stuff started happening with her and the Catwoman suit at Paramount, like, you know, demanding to be Catwoman. And then she dated, what's the guy, James? She dated the really ugly hot actor who's like 70 now. And
is that all of them?
But okay. Well, no, she allegedly like glued his penis to his thigh after he scorned her. So I just feel like if you're willing to do all of that.
Which
for
one?
Was James it, Woods.
Oh, really?
Yes. So that was always the rumor. But if you're willing to go through all that for your sanity, for this business, for something that you're super passionate about, you must have stories and you must have opinions. She would have a ton of opinions.
Have you partied with her?
No.
Andy Serkis, yes.
I have been in Andy Serkis, yes, no. But I've been in a room with her.
Oh, that's
close. Doesn't mean anything.
Was she wearing shoulder pads?
She was wearing shoulder pads. Oh my God.
I like that you guys both went for like gettable people. Like Jay Smooth is a possibility if he were in town. Sean, I'm sure, does not have a lot of stuff going on these
days. She doesn't have enough Twitter followers for us, I don't think.
Megan. Who would you like to see as a Pop Rocket correspondent?
That would be David Miscavige, the leader of the Church of Scientology.
Why? What do you think he has to bring to the table when we're talking about Avengers Age of Ultron?
Well, really, I mean, mostly because he'd be an easier get than Shelley, who is who I'd really like to talk to. But, you know, she's so hard to book.
Yes, because she's being held at a safe house somewhere.
Correct.
But
right.
Do you think David would, like, open up to us, or do you think he would just talk about going up, up, up the bridge?
I would say the latter, not the former.
Yes, understandable. I personally, like, I don't even know if this is a good answer, but I, of course, would love Glenn Weldon from our older stepsister podcast, Pop Culture Happy Hour, just to have, like, the combined balding, bearish force of both of us in one place. That would be very fun.
I thought you were going to say Crystal.
We have to. We're talking about dating online today, but I do actually want to talk to you guys about that race and comedy panel that I did in New York, just because My basic level of uncertainty with that kind of NPR-ish self-congratulatory panel, it's something I want to hear your thoughts on. But the other person I thought of is Ghost of Nora Ephron. Like, when I think about what we bring to the table when it comes to pop culture podcasts, it really is the wintry, LA-y, me name-dropping kind of...
Oh my God!
No, but the thing is I do the same thing as well.
Name dropping to be like aggressive. We're name dropping because it like this is a literal situation that has occurred within our life.
We're in the game, and I think that's something that we can bring to this. And I really feel like Nora would just take that to another level.
Exactly.
I think she would be hilarious. She would be full of opinions, but she would also be like, she would have the anecdotes about Rob Reiner that would take.
But she'd talk about like sharing a bidet with Meryl Streep. Like that's the type of stuff. That's what you need. You need that.
Have you read her books of essays?
No, I need to.
I feel bad about my neck. Megan, you as well. Mm-hmm. You would absolutely die. Thanks.
Let the record show, though. I want to point out that this is the second week in a row that Guy has brought up the NPR Happy Hour.
Yeah.
And I feel like
I don't know. I like
feel like
them.
He's sneaking out behind her back.
A little bit.
And making 3 a.m. text to them about it.
I mean, you know?
I
saw the little circle jerk in his Twitter feed a couple of days ago, and I was like, all right, I'll,
But I think
Linda, you up?
Exactly. I think we should have like an 8-person just combine the two.
Hell no.
Oh, come on. That'd be kind of awesome. We need to reach out. We need to collabo here.
I will collaborate with them.
The thing is that they're too disciplined and we're too interrupty.
Yep.
And if we got together, it would be perfect.
A straight up Warriors brawl.
Be like the Anchorman fight scene.
Anchorman fight scene. I was going to say, Oliver.
Exactly. Welcome to Law 3 Brew in the Max Fun Reddit for that question. You can give us your own answers on the Max Fun Reddit or the Pop Rocket Facebook group. Coming up on this week's show, we are talking about dating online. Everybody does it, but we still don't know how we're supposed to talk about it or how much we're supposed to admit that we do it. Plus, we'll each share our own latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts or entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. All right, Oliver, what are you all about?
So I'm going to give a very quick shout out to Riley Curry, cutest 2-year-old daughter of a MVP ever, as far as I know. But the main thing I'm going to talk about is actually the Scripps Spelling Bee, which just finished yesterday, or actually, I don't know, by the time this aired, a few days ago. And for the second week year in a row, it's had co-champions. And when that happened last year, it was the first time in something like 20 to 25 years since they had co-champions. But that felt kind of cool because, it's about camaraderie and these competitors are always sort of dapping one another. But 2 years in a row, I just feel like it's un-American. You have to have one champion. And so
Oliver,
I think, yes.
Have you seen Akilah and the Bee?
Yes, they had that too.
Okay, that pissed me off so hard. That movie was supposed to be about her embracing her own power, but then we couldn't accept her being a better speller than that Indian kid with bougie parents.
They were just trying to keep it real because the South Asians are running this thing. I mean, they're balling out of control in the spelling
really
bee.
They really are. Why aren't they getting endorsements for this?
Racism.
Racism.
And that plus spelling bee does. I just don't think that really. How would you mark? What would you be marketing? Like, what would be doing endorsements for? Like Puma. I mean,
SpaghettiOs. I don't know. Like, it's something you need.
Alphabet cereal.
All this. The word they actually played it on the radio on my way here. The word, I forget what the word was, but I was like, honestly, I got to give it up to you, kid. You're probably 8 years old, and you had to find out how to spell that word. What's true hell are you living in that you have to deal with that?
Yeah, that's child abuse.
That's
the
child
state
abuse.
Should take them away from
27 letters, all consonants, maybe one vowel. You've got to be kidding me. Mm. That's ridiculous.
Eastern European, that's what they grew up with, though.
That's true.
Well, I mean, if you've got a Tamil last name, you've been managing 30 to 40 letters or something since childhood. I do think there's something interesting about like opening up the world of what we admit that we are interested in, because we've understood sports as being meaningful and powerful and worthy of shit tons of money for a long time. Like us being able to say, hey, people really watch this thing too, I think is really fun.
I just think the whole co-champion thing, if it goes a third year in the row, Scripps needs to redo the
thing. They'll have
to. They need to redo it, and they need to have like a sudden death speed spelling round, which is what everyone wants to see anyways.
And they should live stream it.
Oliver, are you offering your services to be America's first commissioner of spelling?
I'd probably get arrested like the FIFA officials, actually.
I don't think America is powerful enough to take on FIFA. I think that that's ridiculous.
Oh, no, I think they are. The biggest mistake they made, not to even sidebar, was going into Qatar. Going into Qatar was the biggest mistake they ever did. That's what opened all this shit up.
I'm always stunned by people who will willfully vacation a place where I would be beheaded for existing. Megan, what are you all about this week?
Well, I was going to talk about Miley Cyrus, but I feel like that's no longer topical. Most of my references are 800 years old because I am 800 years old.
Megan, go for it. Talk about it.
Well, you know, I'm a 31-year-old divorcee. You know, I've been to a lot of Sonic Youth concerts in my time. But I still think she's, I think she's pretty cool, you know? I'd let her eat me out, for sure.
but she, wasn't the issue that you were going to bring up the her sort of semi-present declaration that she doesn't identify with a gender?
Yeah, essentially that she doesn't exist or chooses not to. Yeah, I found that really fascinating because I can't really think of any other celebrity ever who has made that declaration.
Okay. So she has no gender.
Yeah, she does not identify as one particular gender.
Okay, she rejects the binary. I can respect that.
I like this whole all these kids. Even Raven Simone's doing it. She's not black. She's not a lesbian. She's just a being and like
she's just
melanin
a free floating entity.
Yeah, free floating entity. But like you are a person because you need documentation to leave and come in and out of the country. But I like this whole idea that you don't have to assign yourself a label. I think it's kind of interesting as long as you don't like lose your mind totally.
I mean, with Miley, I a little bit wonder whether it is our response to awareness of trans identity in the same way that sorority girls making out with each other was how we dealt with gay rights in the 90s. So I'm not skeptical in a bad way. I'm just sort of like good for her for sort of like acknowledging that she exists on this spectrum, though like treating it as like a fun little game can be trivializing. About Raven Simone, I come back to the point of...
We need a whole segment on her guy, to be honest.
Oh, fuck yeah. We need audio for it. Yes. She's never not making good, like, media stories. But the thing is, like, I completely respect not confining yourself to the boundaries of definitions.
Right.
But also, like, other people are very willing to confine you to the boundaries of definitions. And we've only... She could only vote and get married because people were black 50 years ago and gay 30 years ago.
Yes. Yes.
So I do believe in that.
And she can
wear
that ridiculous hairdo on morning television. It's literally like seeing a cockatoo at 10 a.m. I don't need it.
How about we give both these kids a break? I mean, they're children. Their brains aren't even fully developed yet.
No, they have millions of dollars and they make decisions and they have the ability to sort of project that imagery onto millions of people and influence them. They can take it. They will take it.
How old is Raven at this point?
She's probably
24. In her 30s. Oh, she's only
24. That's what I'm saying. Your brain isn't developed until
older.
You're 25.
No, she is older because Lindsay is 28 and they were friends. So it's like 27. She's old enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
She's old enough.
She's not Olivia anymore.
No.
No.
Winner, what are you all about?
So Amy Farrell had this fascinating interview in International Business Times about fat shame, and I read it, and she wrote this paper called Fat Chance, The Line Between Health and Shame is Becoming Increasingly Thin. Well, that's really catchy. But she also talked about the emergence of the dad bod, and then she talked about how women now who are sort of buying butts and buying breasts, they're going to an ideal that's only acceptable within the confines of what America can sort of deal with. It goes into, she talks about a lot of different things. She talks about sort of how we put a lot of pressure on women. The more successful a woman becomes, the thinner that she needs to become. But a man can have a dad bod and we can accept that he has he works out just only a little bit and is still approachable. And it also struck a chord with me because as a black woman, I was sort of like traumatized growing up because my body was shaped so sexually. And there was a trend. There was something trending the last couple of days about your first time you were catcalled on the street. And I couldn't believe it. But most girls have their first time they've heard it from anyone, any male or female, whomever was like 11 years old. Mm. And I thought about it and I was like, 100%. I was 11 years old. and a guy, I was wearing my softball uniform, and, you know, for anybody who knows me, I have a big butt, and at that time, super flat-chested, but just having a guy say something like that to me when I'm 11 is so confusing. So just,
but that's a little girl.
Right.
Like my niece is 13 and she's still pretty much a little girl. But like 11, you're so shitheaded.
Yeah, you are. You're well, no, I didn't say that the man was 11. The man was older than 11.
No. I don't mean that. I don't mean it. I just mean that is such a gigantic thing to throw at somebody who's barely formed.
Of course. And so that's why this story was interesting. It was saying that basically men created this situation with the dieting revolution, everything to make us inferior, with, you know, make us feel as inferior with our bodies. And our bodies are so a part of ourselves. There's so much that goes on with being a woman. I just found the interview really fascinating because she really went there and talked about race, gender, and class, and talked about how this affects a Black woman, like our sense of self-worth versus someone like, you know, Beyonce. Well, Beyonce's a Black woman, but like, you know, Kim, who's like not a Black woman, but she's really loves the look of a Black female and has sort of adopted it. And it's acceptable when she does it, but we can't be sexual beings ourselves, Black women.
The place of class in body shaming, I think, is fascinating. I was watching a documentary about Loretta Lynn years ago, and it was just so great to see how her daughters from before all the money looked like women in Appalachia look, and her daughters from after the money look like women in Los Angeles are supposed to look. And I Los Angeles is even more extreme in the way that it just cannot process a woman unless she looks like what a woman is supposed to look like in America. Megan, what are your thoughts?
Well, thinness is a class issue, definitely. I mean, the more money you have, the thinner you are. So that's what creates that whole dichotomy between the Zaftig broad and the you know, like the ideal, I guess. I think it's more of a class issue than a gender issue, really.
What's funny about that is, too, is if you go back not that far in history, was the flip side, is that if you were rich, having a larger body was a sign of your wealth. Mm-hmm. But instead, we've managed to now invert it. And so, which suggests none of these things are natural. I mean, this is me being a sociologist, but they're socially constructed. So,
right.
Yeah.
I'm so rich, I don't have to eat.
Boom.
What the fuck?
Yeah, right.
Well, and it's also always interesting when you have children of immigrants who have parents who are still sort of projecting upon their daughters a, like, no, you need to be round and full to show that we could afford food.
Not my mom.
But the other thing, too, is, like, it's unfortunate. I only have one lifetime, but it took me until I was my early 30s to remind myself why I love my body and that I spent all these years sort of hiding it and only occasionally showing it if it was in the construct of being a sexual being. But like now I feel way more comfortable about it, and I have to compete with all these people who don't naturally have that body type. So now I feel more, I'd feel the need to just preserve this as much as I possibly freaking can.
Well, it's a great way to keep you out of the game. Like, I was so old before I realized that Black women are not allowed to be professional with their natural hair.
Yeah.
Like, and just realizing how much time and effort has to go into stuff like that. And it was one of my problems with everyone getting all over themselves about the Joan Didion Chloe ad. Like, I love Joan Didion as much as anyone else. But for me, it was so much a merger of this, look at how responsibly thin and tasteful she is.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
These are the sorts of ladies who get to be thoughtful and have those thoughts taken seriously. If a woman is larger, then she's Jennifer Weiner and she is writing Chick Lit and she must be run by her emotions.
I think it's changing. I honestly think it's shifting. I think it's just becoming so blatant, and with the appropriation of Black culture, that Black women are mad as hell and we're tired of it. And we just want to be accepted for who we are as we are and without having to assimilate to anything. I just want to be myself. That's it. I don't want to be anybody else. I've never wanted to be anybody else.
How dare you, Winter? It's everyone's obligation to want to be a white guy. This week, I am all about, two issues from the HBO Sunday night. The first one is, this was officially the first time ever I watched Silicon Valley before I watched Game of Thrones, because Silicon Valley has gotten so good and is very, very funny.
Really?
And,
it really and has.
Game of Thrones is just, it's a shit show. Yes. They've diverged from the books. I'm scared at all times. But I specifically wanted to talk about Silicon Valley is weird because it is one of those situations where, like, Megan and I'm sure Winter and I all know a working majority of the people on that show. Mm-hmm. And so it's weird to talk about your friends. But Kumail Nanjiani's performance on that show is so consistently it's magnificent. And it also does an amazing job of taking problematic writing and taking it in a more nuanced and interesting direction. That show... It's so funny. There was just a Slate article that confused him and Kunal Nayar, who plays essentially the same role. Not the same role, but both of them are South Asian guys who work in science or tech, who are both construed as being very, very alienated around women. It is more cartoonish on Big Bang Theory. He would not talk in front of women. On Silicon Valley, it's just presented him as being a 30-year-old virgin who doesn't know how to talk to women. It is... It is a kind of bad writing. It is writing that is just sort of taking this.
You think the writing's bad?
I think the writing is really good, but I think that choice is a very cliched choice.
Right.
That sort of brings along this stereotype of South and East Asian men as being like sexless. And I think that Kumail has consistently made very, very subtle human choices and like empowered choices that bring it back into the world of this is just a dude living his reality. It is a bad choice in its way, but I think that he has redeemed it so much.
I mean, have you ever met a tech dweeb? They're all just impotent guys in North Face jackets.
Not all of them.
Right.
There's actually, like, I don't know. I came up with all of these people, and that's why I like Silicon Valley, because they made a joke about Kevin Rose, which is hilarious.
Yes, that was hilarious. That was real shady.
And I literally just like, I was like, okay, I'm annoyed you name checked him, but like, yay. But the thing is that there are the at least this generation, I've always had a super duper attraction to like really smart guys, and you kind of make accommodations for the fact that some of them are just really weird. But one thing that I found is, like, on last night's episode when he had that date with the girl, like, he was really excited about that date until Ehrlich sort of like cut his balls off. But he was showing emotion there.
No, I think he does. I think Kumail does
about something.
Really great work, but there's never a plot line that isn't him having his balls cut off,
right,
which is a problem. Oliver, do you watch the show at all?
Well, I watched probably a third or maybe even half of the first season. And eventually me and my wife stopped watching it because it just was too tech bro-y, and there weren't enough women in it. And I felt like it was sort of like Entourage except in Silicon Valley. And I wasn't that interested in watching
it. But that show does such a great job of wrestling with these issues in the honest way that Silicon Valley kind of has to.
Right. I find that that's the lack of women is representative of how it actually is.
Right. But again, I don't need to watch that because...
What's the name of the girl? The only way she can be even like present or in a scene is if she's like disagreeing with them and thinking that it's a really bad idea. And also wearing like, you know, a really cute like...
Yes.
BB dress.
But they like brought on Alice Wetterlin this year. They brought on... two ladies are sort of like power figures on the corporate side of things. And I think that they're trying to wrestle with the issues of gender and tech in a way. Basically, I think they get their storylines honestly by dealing with the actual shit that's being dealt with there. I just feel like the stuff with Dinesh, Kumail's character, is so consistently just playing... A hack, terrible stereotype that does not reflect the fact that there are a billion people in India and 200, 300 million in Pakistan, so they be fucking.
I was thinking, too, I went to school in the Bay Area, and this was kind of right in the middle and pre-tech boom. But most of the South Asian guys I knew,
of us need to feel really guilty for not making $1 million.
Yeah, yeah.
By being at Berkeley in the 90s.
Are you kidding?
No, I
sat next to Kevin Rose. I didn't get any of that.
I mean, I had students who on paper were millionaires because if they had some startup thing, which of course then went, you know, kaput and they didn't make $1 million. But a lot of the South Asian guys I knew, they weren't necessarily the engineers, but they basically wanted to go in venture capital. So they were aiming in sort of the tech field, maybe not at the super scientific level, but they were in the area. And they were like super douchey, like bro dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think partly, I mean, I'm completely, you know, riffing off the top of my head about this, but I think part of it is that's just they felt like they had to overcompensate because of the stereotypes that you're talking about, Guy, and sort of went in the other direction where, you know, they're glad handing people, they're wearing nice suits, and it's they're playing into a completely different stereotype of Silicon Valley, you know, masculinity that is not the nerded out asexual.
It's,
but
it's like the East Asian like tech and venture capital guys who ended up going super like. Oh, I forget which store. Oh, like Diesel, like very, very sort of like
there.
Preppy, well-dressed. Is this guy gay? He has such amazing arms.
No. But they have more media to contend with now. They can bounce sort of like looks and ideals and imagery off of each other and look at more people representative of the culture than it like Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs sitting like by themselves in like a room with like four other guys, like where they had like focused on was this and smoking grass. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
it's different.
And there's also a difference between, the alpha male venture capitalist guys the coders.
The ones
who are actually behind the scenes, like, you know, eating, drinking that, the Soylent?
Yes.
So they don't have to eat?
I want to try Soylent, actually.
Absolutely.
I actually did hear you.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
Totally. It seems disgusting. And it's also just Slim Fast.
Right.
It is no homo Slim Fast.
Not to go too far off on this tangent, Guy, but you know, your points here are making me think of how, you know, one of the accusations or complaints about both Aziz Ansari as well as Mindy Kaling is they don't really deal with them being their Indianness at all in their acts. And it seems as if it's the choice is either the kind of caricature that you're describing with, in this show, or you go completely aracial in essence, right? And that there's no in between where you can basically talk or play some aspect of being South Asian that isn't non-existent, or it's not just complete caricature.
That's Hollywood, right? But no, but that's a really good point. First of all, Aziz is like Kumail, Pakistani, not Indian.
Oh.
But I'm not being correcty. They were the same thing until 1947.
look at Guy.
Getting
post-colonial up in here.
All right.
But there is that fascinating point which I run into with a lot of friends. And as a gay comic, it's something I run into, this notion that this thing is either something that consumes and defines you or something that you should never, ever talk about.
Right.
Like our friend Aparna Nancherla is very self-conscious about going anywhere near Indianness because she's scared that it will sort of like subsume people's understanding of her. And I think that that's an issue for a lot of stand-up comics who aren't white. That makes me feel so sad because you should be able to talk about the entirety of your experience without people just sort of saying like, oh, they're the blank guy. And I'm sure people watch me and they think, oh, that's just that gay guy. But there may be people who should not be my audience if they cannot realize anything more subtle about me.
No, but maybe you're the one who's going to show them the way.
Well, that's a goddamn dream, isn't it?
to dream the impossible dream.
Keister, any thoughts on subcultural identification or cultural identification?
Well, it's very
assuming your identity.
Well, I mean, what you guys are talking about with Aziz and Kumail and whatnot, it's just, well, not Kumail, well, Aziz and Mindy Kaling. It's very much like that being a woman, too. I mean, you can either completely go off the rails in terms of talking about your experience or just ignoring the fact that you have a pussy. Do you know what I mean?
Whoa.
Well, and Kumail is because
so
Kumail,
early for pussy.
Kumail lived in Pakistan until he was like 18. So he's a guy who in his material kind of has to deal with it and does deal with it as just texture of who he is in a really great way. And I think that's one of the things that allows him to bring this kind of subtlety and texture to the part is that he's somebody who's used to telling you a story about a weird Pakistani amusement park where people just die, but also make that feel relatable and human and not like it is some sort of alien thing.
Mm.
Now it just sounds like I have a crush on him.
Yeah, I think you do, though.
You're listening to Pop Rocket. We will be right back to talk about online dating after this.
I listen to Bullseye for the moment when Jesse asks an artist an insightful question, and the artist goes, "Oh, huh," and pauses. And you can hear in the pause that he is reassessing his own work in light of the question that Jesse just asked.
Bullseye's your guide to what's good. From MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Hello, guys. Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. Hey, guys, who's over there in the LA studio?
Oliver Wang.
Winter Mitchell.
Megan Keister.
Winter, what are we talking about today?
We're going to talk about my favorite topic of all, above all else, and that's online dating. So this week, Oliver actually really brought it up, but there was, which I think is funny because he's married happily with a family.
As far as anyone knows.
Thank you for thinking of the little people. He wanted to talk about sort of the fact that Adult Friend Finder got hacked. And the biggest, the largest revelation is that it was not protective of people's profiles and their proclivities. So that's all over the place, probably somewhere on Silk Road. And then also, it revealed that only 6% of women use it, which is completely obvious because they only advertise it on porn sites. And I don't know how I'd know that. And then the other study that I thought of was the 42% of users on Tinder are already in fucking relationships.
Maybe they're open.
I don't give a shit. That is so beyond rude. I'm going to call my girlfriend Rosette, who is head of communications. And it's funny that she didn't comment on that story. Then there's also like these fringe dating sites like, you know, Christian Farmers, alienworshippers.com, dating.com, who like don't do nearly as well as Tinder.
Back to the Adult Friend Finder.
Wait, go ahead.
I love that we essentially just have a more technologically complex answer to those like dial a lady numbers that you used to see on late night television where it was still just all dudes because, yeah.
It's gotten worse. I mean, it's gotten worse in terms of like the BA. Let's just unpack it. Let's just get in.
Have you actually used the site?
Adult Friend Finder? No. Yeah. I mean, I've definitely seen it a bunch of times. I would never put my information in that. That just shows how stupid men are. You look at the ads, and the ads are like,
It looks scammy.
It looks scammy. It looks like MySpace 2005. Right. You should never click on that. Here's a tip. Winter Mitchell, people strategist, never click on something that completely looks fake and low quality.
Use of web design to determine like the reliability of a website is so completely true.
Thank you. And that's why most of our parents get in trouble. Because something says, did you click on this? And they're like, no, I didn't. I should. So Adult Friend Finder is advertised mostly on like Pornhub and RedTube. And it's aggressively promoted there. So I can see how there'd be no women because women are still trying to figure out if they should look at porn or not.
How does that 94 to 6 ratio compared to, let's say, Match or OkCupid or more mainstream?
Oh, you got me there, Oliver. I would assume that the woman who's looking for commitment is going to Match, is going to maybe OkCupid. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. Definitely JDate.
I think the more human an interaction is, the more it feels like it is screening out. It is giving her indicators that she can use to determine whether this guy is a creep, is going to be like a safer and more exciting place for women.
Right. Because Adult Friend Finder is basically, it tells you, it says, and I'm sorry if there's children listening, but the ads are like, do you want to fuck tonight? And it's
also,
like,
who doesn't?
Like, I was like, oh, yes.
Sign me up.
But not like that. I'll find other options.
If there are children listening to our podcast, they are wrong. And their parents are wrong.
Their parents are wrong. I think that's more to do with it.
I really am excited in a world where gay men are essentially appropriating all of our culture from women of various races. I just love the possibility that we could give back fun and non-sex. But it really does require living in a world with less creepiness and less possibility of there being something terrible that happens to you if you go for a good time. I think that there's something so fun and exciting about, like, Tinder as an evolution of Grindr. They tried to do Grindr that, and for those, everyone knows what Grindr is, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's 2015.
But, like, they tried to do Grindr for straight people and they figured out that would never work because women aren't just going to show up to some stranger's house and be like, yeah, won't fuck. but that if you did have sort of like the matching element and a little more sort of information and knowing who their friends were, that, like, that was more chill. And I liked people having sort of like the ease of a phone app and being able to locate people around you and all of that. And it feels like it has taken off nicely. Megan, do you ever use Tinder to find dates?
Absolutely not.
Why?
I would rather swipe right on both of my wrists and join Tinder. It's a horror show. It's a horror. I've watched my friend Lil Mama used to swipe right on everybody in order to generate these absurd reactions from guys.
That's very talented comedian Allison Stevenson. Neil Nanda, also a comic. I saw him doing that, and I was like, you little bastard. No, you're throwing off stats. I want to know that if somebody swipes right on me,
right,
that means that, well, I've got a chance.
I mean, Neil Nanda swiping right on everyone makes sense because he's, you know, got a dick. Little Mom was just doing it for the lulz. She had 25,000 matches before Tinder kicked her off. Cultivated a very interesting Instagram feed as a result of it.
So what's the horror show element here? As someone who has not
looking
this.
At her messages from these random Yahoos, that just the complete and utter disregard for her as a human being, mm-mm, with, you know, thoughts, emotions, and feelings.
Mm-mm. I would say that there are some boys who treat Tinder as though it were a Pokedex.
No, I mean, like, I don't really like it. I'll be honest. Like, I don't like online dating. I'm one of those stupid women who thinks that I'm going to meet somebody, like, in a meet cute type situation, and we're going to, like, have a wedding song and dance to Latch. But I also...
Winter spends a lot of time getting the heels of her shoes caught in manhole covers, just hoping Matthew...
I don't know what I'm doing! No, I just... I met Marco on OkCupid, and I didn't think Marco was a real person, but Marco and I have an arrangement that suits me just fine. If I were looking for, and he's dashing and freaking hot, but I also am looking for the one, and I don't really think that I'm going to find that person. Men are just too weird in general. Men do not like women that are smart, that are probably investigative. They also really don't like women who have, like, opinions about every single thing and talk a lot. They just want you to be a whole. And that's what most of Tinder and OkCupid is sort of serving up.
Yeah, and I don't really understand. Everyone I know uses both of those websites, and everyone I know resents it.
Yeah.
No one has a fucking gun to your head making you debase yourself
online.
And when
they take themselves off, they go, well, I'm off it now.
And then they immediately get back on.
And then they have one bad date, and they're immediately back on.
I fundamentally challenge the notion that it is debasing. Like, I am on record as saying I don't like online dating. I need online dating.
Wait. I am, don't like it, but you need it.
I am this. It's a joke from my album.
Literally, you are on record saying that. Okay.
I am the sexual equivalent of a left-handed oyster shucking glove. Like, I am a niche product, so I need sort of like more sophisticated marketing tools. And it's a better world for me if I can screen people both for sort of sexual taste and personality. And the thing is like, and I almost never find the two of those in the same place, but like, when you're gay, you're starting out, I'm just looking at like 1.5% of the population. That makes it hard to just wait for somebody to wander up to me in a supermarket.
But I also want to talk about the fact that you said something about it being niche. Like, that's another piece of data that's troubling, is that most Black women aren't being chosen. We're just simply not being chosen. And so for me to go into a situation where I'm also faced with, I went on a date 2 weeks ago. The guy literally fetishized black women. He spent the entire evening talking to me, and I just entertained it because it's also really funny. It's,
right.
You think it's bad on messages. It's so much fun in person because you can just systematically break down a man, which I find joy in.
Of course.
To get him to the point where he just either submits to you and gives you all of the dick, or he just turns around and cowers and starts crying. Both of which have happened in the last 6 months. So if I'm not going to have a man accept me as a potential life mate, I at least want to have some fun with it.
Wait, I want to you know? Understand how you made someone cry.
He just was lying. He was making up stories because he thought that we're in L.A. and I met her at Chateau. She'll be impressed by this. And I basically was like, Matt Damon's not going to be born again. He was absolutely not here because he's filming in Shanghai. And I don't even know what you're telling me right now, but all of it is complete bullshit. And he just started, he found something to cry about it and access something and just cry.
I would have loved to be at the table next to you watching this all unfold.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
The stories that I hear, the reports back of men on dates just talking about what an amazing big deal they are or lecturing female comics about how much funnier they are. Men just seem terrible. I'm not a huge fan of them. And they're all that I date. Oliver, how did you meet your lady?
Well, see, it's funny because our main producer, Colin, he put this out in side notes to our discussion today about how, oh, maybe me and Margaret wouldn't have much to say about online dating as if we were born in the 1920s or something.
I know.
Just because we're married. And I got to know my wife because we were email pen pals for 2 years. And the two previous girlfriends before that were women that I initially got to know as via just emailing. So even though I didn't meet them through like Match.com or whatever the equivalent would have been back
you
in the
day. You courted each other digitally.
Yeah. So
did you become email pen pals?
She had read something I'd written and had emailed me with a series of questions about it. And we struck up a correspondence for 2 years based off of that and then fell out of touch for 2 years. It's a longer story. But
your love has footnotes?
Yes. All good love should have footnotes. So I don't have the experience except for I think I went on one Craigslist date back in 2002, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But I never filled out the profile and went through that sort of that routine of online dating. But certainly the idea that you can build intimacy with someone very quickly in sort of a written correspondence in a way that's much more awkward in person when people are trying to make you cry, for example. Mm-hmm. I understand that aspect, I understand that part of it. I am really intrigued, though, just listening to people's experiences here in the room and guys, yours as well. So what are the sort of the differences between the experience of dating, you know, outside of an online realm in which you initially meet people versus being set up or, you know, running to someone at a bar? Are there major differences?
I became gay when we started the internet, and I pretty much have always, like, dates, like 80 to 90% that I have gone on had their origin online. A very small minority of them have been from just sort of like seeing someone across a crowded bar, because generally when you go to a gay bar, physically, I'm not what most people are looking for. So I would say the biggest difference is that when you meet someone at a bar, they usually say, "Hey, are you on Chelsea lately?"
I have people see pictures of me because I photograph well. So I get a lot of people who swipe and like me, but they won't make that move because I'm not thirsty. So I won't like be like, "Oh my God, hi, we matched. Isn't that crazy?" Like, I'm not that kind of girl. I'm such a unique person. I'm kind of a tomboy. I'm really modern. I have a modern opinion about most things. I'm independent and I sort of like stand in my own struggle, but I'm super fun and really knowledgeable. So I usually think that that's appealing to men. I usually think that, but I think I just overwhelm them. So usually, and honestly, like, I hate to keep going back to my body, but I have the body of a woman and I think is curvy and shapely and men just love that. So the first thing that they do is really try to sexualize their experience with me, and they immediately always want to have sex, and I sometimes I'm like, I'm never gonna see him again, fuck it. And then sometimes I'm like, ew, no, like, I actually like you, I don't want to go there. And I'm not gonna say that I have the most success dating. I do not. But I will say the majority of men who are in love with me are equally afraid of me.
So what's the online component here, though?
That it's easier to sort of fool them with trickery online versus in person. A guy has to hang out with me a long enough time before he's like, I want to punch her or I want to bang her. One or the other is going to happen. And that's usually sort of it. I have better luck when I've known somebody a lot longer in person.
I mean, I just feel like the internet has given us very good tools for different kinds of tools. Like I love Grindr and Scruff and the world of being
Scruff?
Able.
Scruff?
Yes. That is for barrier guys.
Oh, good. I like it.
And like musclier guys and hairier guys, that sort of thing. the point is that like, if you just want to order sex like takeout and you're a gay man, it's just so doable, particularly in West
so
Hollywood.
Lucky.
And then in like, it took me forever to go on either OkCupid or Tinder because I kind of thought of them as being for straight people. And it's wonderful. Like OkCupid does such a responsible job of like figuring out what makes you tick and then figuring out the guys that might work with. And Tinder, just starting out from a place of knowing, does he like the way I look in this photo? Like, you know, is so helpful to sort of like reach out. Megan,
yes.
You have not been making a whole lot of noise here. You're above online dating.
I do not date. Yeah, period.
How do you meet significant others?
Well,
writing think pieces about your lesbianism.
Well, I mean, I have created an OkCupid profile once for a short film I made wherein I made a profile for my ceramic cat, Miss Dixie. And
that's a real good video.
Yeah, the number of messages I received wherein men asked, "Are you really a cat?" really just soiled me on the whole, just the overwhelming idiocy of it.
That is extraordinary.
And Lil Mama, you know, is always trolling Tinder too. So for a long time, her bio was just, "I hate men." That was it. That was all of it. And then just all of these messages. Just, wait a second. Do you really hate men? Do you really hate men? Are you really a ceramic cat? I can't deal with it. I'm ready, willing, and able to die alone in my bed closet. If only so I can avoid that level of overwhelming idiocy.
Look, nobody loves being alone more than I do. But God knows I've opened up a fair number of Grindr and or OkCupid and or gay.com conversations with a dickish asshole question of that sort.
Mm. But let's talk about this because the whole thing, the notion is that we are becoming so much more disconnected, yet we're flocking to these platforms for connection. And, you know, something that I always knew from the moment that I was born that I was special, thank God. But I also always knew that I was going to have problems in this area. It just was something that dawned on me very early. I'd say like 3 or 4. I'm always going to be unique and it's always going to be hard for boys to like me. And so now, like, I'm 35 and I'm sitting here thinking to myself, okay, I don't have a boyfriend. Everyone's getting married. Everyone, am I supposed to be doing this? And I've asked this question. I've asked sociologists. I've asked dating coaches. I've asked, you know, thought leaders. I've asked love experts. I've asked everybody. I've asked Dr. Drew. I was like, am I supposed to want to be married? Is it natural? Is my body telling me this? Or am I just really happy existing in my independence? I am happy existing in my independence, but I don't know why it's so freaking hard to meet someone I can just tolerate.
I feel like feminism fucked this harder than anything else.
Yeah.
God damn it.
I know, but I mean, you guys exist at this point in time not so long after everything changed for women, and a lot of men's expectations about what a relationship will be, a lot of women's expectations about what a relationship will be, are rooted in anachronism or fantasies. And it is fascinating to watch the people I know who have gotten married and then
they're miserable, by the way.
Or divorced because they couldn't figure out how to be in a relationship with two human beings.
Yeah, the men are flabbergasted that we want respect. How beyond the realm of possibility is that?
And gay marriages have also, like those Irish people, I'm like, do they realize it takes 5 years to get a divorce in Ireland?
Yeah.
Because we've kind of run into the thing of a lot of people being overwhelmed by what really goes along with marriage. I do kind of believe that the thing the Christian said about gay people ruining marriage is true, in that we will force people... we will force people to wonder what happens in a marriage when there are two human beings there. For a long time, we were able to be like, it's one human being and then kind of a human being. Mm-hmm. But like having to like look at a marriage of two dudes and figure out how that power dynamic works, mm-hmm. I think will...
The happiest couples in my Facebook timeline are gay, older gay male couples, straight up living their best fucking life. I want all of that.
Right. And the thing is that I think as people grow up seeing marriages that are two women, two men, they're going to, like, the little boys who are 10 years old right now are going to be able to enter into a relationship with a woman and maybe not have the same kind of, most of your job is to be my mom kind of dynamic. Oliver, defend heterosexual men.
I want to take this actually a slightly different tangent, which is I think one of the interesting things about online dating is from a social scientist point of view is that for people who want to study dating practices, it's become a really interesting and valuable data source because you can collect so much more information much more quickly than you would if you're trying to track people dating in sort of the non-digital environment. And so, you know, I mean, OkCupid has definitely played up its own studies in-house using its user base as part of its data pool. You know, the Pew Research Center has done a lot of work on this over the years. And it's been, you know, this has only existed really in the last, I would say, probably 10 to 15 years, where you now see a lot of studies around sort of conventional American dating practices using online dating as its primary pool of data, which has both its upsides and downsides. But I think Winter was mentioning this earlier, I think a lot of stuff around dating and race is fascinating that gets revealed through people's online preferences in a way that would be harder to get through a paper survey or interviews because people don't want to admit to their preferences in front of a in those cases.
Right.
But they'll do it online because, they feel anonymous.
Yeah, the anonymity.
The anonymity, but also they're doing it. They're doing it in a way like I this is the first time in person I've had to deal with a man literally not understanding black woman because he had a dream about one when he was 25 while he was married to a white woman. And then he suddenly latched onto that as that is supposed to be what he's supposed to be with, a black woman.
I don't know. The logic seems pretty sound.
You know what, though? I was flabbergasted and I just went along with it because I'm just acclimating stories so I can have a hell of a fucking memoir. But he literally felt like he put black women in this box, and that's where they existed, and white women was not his preference. But it just the thing that he was doing with black women was so uncomfortable that I had to know more. I was like, tell me. I was like clicking a link. Tell me more. How do you feel this way? How do you
Winter,
think about this?
Winter, is it safe to say that if a man puts black women in a box, he's not getting in yours?
Hello.
I like experiments, but I'm not struggling here. I don't want to bring him home to meet my mother and father ever. I don't even want people to even know that this happened. However, I don't think that it's right for you to feel like you can't talk about if you're attracted to a black woman.
Yeah.
Black women are very different fabrics, types of women from all over the country, all over the world. We're not all what is, promoted. Well,
also, if you're going to fetish...
Love and Hip Hop Atlanta.
If you're going to fetishize something or someone, the easiest place to do that is the internet.
Right.
Because that's all the internet is, basically, at this
point.
Yes,
it's one big circle jerk.
Right.
Here's an etiquette question, is that if you have an anti-preference, in other words, you don't want to date, let's say, black women, or you don't want to date Asian men, which are the two least desirable.
Sorry, buddy.
Sorry. Yeah. Solidarity.
Solidarity.
Here we go. Boom.
Fist bump. Here we go.
Well... Is it rude to put that in the profile, or are you doing people a favor by just being upfront about it?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to find somebody else who's just as intolerant, I think, if you do that.
So then it's a good thing, is what you're saying.
Well, I mean, it's not a good thing, but you're probably not going to fail.
As I said, I came of age sexually at the same time that the internet was starting and was just sort of... in Minnesota, which is like the most racist gay guys I've ever dealt with. And so many of them were just so ready to be like white men, like white guys only, And I got into so many fights with people because it just struck me as like the grossest thing to do.
Well, it's also a way to separate the wheat from the chaff, though. I mean, they're doing you a favor if they say that. So then you know, I don't want anything to do with this
No,
guy.
But I don't need a constant reminder that you don't want me. Just don't swipe or don't click.
I had my girlhood anger that I like needed to work through of just being like, how can you be such a dickbag like that? And then did a solid business cleaning up with black guys from the Air Force Base. But Oliver, you do know the standard like Grindr and gay dating app line, don't you? I always wonder how much straight people know like the cliche gay line of exclusions.
No, please break this down.
Winter?
I only know a little bit about like hosting and like the code you can give off and knowing are you down for this, are you up for that?
Yes.
Or do you do drugs? Can I bring this? Can you're I talking, come in your mouth?
You're talking about P&P, that's party and play.
Right.
But no fats, no femmes, no Asians.
Okay.
Like it is just a very frequently deployed. It is such a cultural trope that there's almost less judgment around it. Like in Los Angeles, I don't think you could say no black guys or white guys only and have somebody not be like, that's
fuck
gross.
You. Right.
Or you need to recognize the ways in which your sexual tastes are culturally defined. But no fats, no femmes, no Asians is just such a
hurtful.
Like,
that hurts me.
And it's also so reflective of a very specific kind of gay self-hatred.
Yeah.
Like the no femmes, like there's a lot, gay stuff, there's also a huge amount of play acting about how not gay you are. Like I had two friends, who they met online and they were just friends with each other because they had both insisted that they were bisexual guys trying out sex for the first time. And then they hooked up. It kind of didn't work because they were both bottoms. And then they decided to be friends. But you know, when they were talking their stories to each other, they were both mask tops.
I just don't like the idea that nobody will let me be who I am and exist in that confine. And the one something that my girlfriend said about the guy, the dummy who was fetishizing black women. She's like, maybe have you thought about this? Maybe you weren't black enough for him. And I literally went, whoa, I hadn't even thought about that.
By black enough, you mean his character in his mind of
yes.
what a black woman is, right?
And then I was really pissed because I was like, wait a minute, what? Like, okay, I don't wear a weave. But and I'm sure he was talking about the last girl he dated, like wore $800 weave. And I was like, but I am super militant. And so but I'm not like.
Like upstairs to check boxes.
Here. No, but it's like I'm just different.
It's that bougie girl voice. It's that bougie girl voice.
You know, and the fact that I were literally listening to Cream in the Uber. I was like, honestly, I'm allowed to like Cream. Like, like whatever, I don't care. Like, and then when we get back to my house, I'm gonna play like King Kunta hella loud like four times in a row by Kendrick. I'm just a different person. I can't find anybody. I'm just gonna put it out there. I cannot find anybody.
If you're in the greater Los Angeles basin,
yeah, this has turned into like
if
you'd
like to
Winter's
date
plea
either,
for, you know,
Winter or me. Hey, I'm pleading too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Please hit me up on Twitter. I will go out on a date with you.
This is not going to end.
Oh,
well.
You don't want to say that.
Oh, yeah. I don't care. I'm opening it up.
Gee, what are you, sociopath?
No, yeah, I'm a little bit of a thrill seeker.
Persons of any gender who deeply love snark and anger and bitterness, please feel free to hit up Megan Keister.
Please don't.
The Pop Rocket message board.
Do not talk to me. I will not make eye contact with you. I will not respond to your at reply on Twitter. Nor will I fade it.
She'll in fact block it.
You guys, you're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back after this.
Hello, buddies. I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Andy Bolt.
And we're the host of Bunker Buddies. We're a podcast where we're amateur survivalists, and we talk about things like the apocalypse.
And we talk about zombies and preparedness.
What are you going to wear when it's the apocalypse?
And you have no idea if you don't listen to our show. It comes out every Wednesdays on MaximumFun.org and on iTunes. Sometimes we try weird foods, or we talk about where to camp, or how to avoid getting eaten, or any of these things.
Yeah, so listen to us, because it might just save your life.
We'll see you in the bunker.
Bye!
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum, at a shared workspace in Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
Huzzah!
In the Los Angeles studio are...
Winter Mitchell.
Megan Keister.
And Oliver Wang.
Margaret Wappler, we hope that you are safe and well. Return to us. We don't blame you for anything.
What am I, chopped fucking liver here, Guy? Come on. Do you really have to say this while I'm sitting here?
Yes.
You're a sad also ran, Megan. Oliver, why don't you tell Megan what the question we ask each week is?
We ask our guests, and as well as each other, what is our current jam? Do you have a current jam?
My current jam is my constant jam, which is Xanadu by Olivia Newton-John.
Oh, there you go.
That's pretty much the only song I need to listen to.
Megan.
In perpetuity.
My jam this week is just going to be agreeing with you. Tell everybody why you love Xanadu.
I don't even know if I can quantify into words how it makes me feel. You know, I'm a deeply cynical, negative person, and it's the only time I feel true joy is when I'm listening to Xanadu by Olivia Newton-John.
I mean,
it's transcendent.
You get to feel in your heart the roller skating,
yes,
the bad early 80s diversity of the muses from the movie Xanadu, the sheer amount of hair movement that goes on in that film is emotionally meaningful for me. Oliver, did you want to talk about how Xanadu had affected your life?
Well, can we say that Xanadu would be on the top five list of songs that are much better than the movies that they come from?
Correct. Yes. I mean, you know, Xanadu I don't watch the picture much, but the song, geez Louise, I can't tell you how many times I've sobbed to that song. I can't tell you how many times I've not sobbed. I can't articulate how amazing it is.
Oliver, I want you to shift your perspective for a moment. Will you do that for me?
Yes, sure.
Okay. Could you be a five-year-old little boy who maybe likes fun and fantasy and flowing garments a little bit more than he's supposed to, seeing on television Olivia Newton-John roller skating through his world, bringing along some Greek mythology and some ELO tunes?
I mean, keep in mind, when I was five, this was at the height of disco, so I basically saw variations on that all the time. That was my formative introduction into sort of music and pop culture, was really via disco, and Xanadu is really at the tail end of that. So yeah, I can imagine.
She made Sonny Malone realize that his dream in life was to start a roller disco. Sonny Malone never would have known that if she had not been there being a muse for him.
Also, in the context of Olivia Newton-John in the future's boyfriend pretending to die in order to escape her, Xanadu has even more meaning for me,
all right,
personally.
We've taken this too long. Let's listen to a clip.
Let's just say that Olivia Newton-John back in the 70s and early 80s, top 10 dimetastic. I mean, Grease, every time I see Grease, it's like, wow.
You're saying what-tastic?
Dimetastic.
She's also like 34 playing a 16-year-old. Yeah. Let's not forget.
Does dimetastic mean she's a 10?
Yes.
Fuckable. Oh,
I didn't know. Also, a song of hers I did not know that until they included it in the Xanadu Broadway musical is that everyone should listen to is Have You Never Been Mellow, which completely...
That was from Xanadu?
No, it's not in Xanadu. Oh, okay, they included it in the Broadway musical because it was like her first crossover hit. But it really is this sort
That's
of...
That's my childhood right here.
Every bad cliche of easy listening is sort of like validated but also transcended in that song. That song is so wonderful and terrible at the same time. I'm sorry I co-opted your What's My Jam.
Know you didn't have one this week, so that's okay.
I didn't have one, and this is so much better than anything I would have done. Winter, what's your jam?
This actually came out earlier. This album came out earlier this year, the Mark Ronson compilation. Mm-hmm. Mark Ronson just has this knack for like making these amazing compilations because all his friends are like Grammy-winning artists and producers. So this song is called Summer Breaking, and it came on. It's all quadrants. It came on this week while I was sort of sitting on at the beach in Venice. And the last few sunsets in Los Angeles, I don't know, we have like world-class sunsets here in Los Angeles.
It's
I don't know if
smog.
You heard. It's the smog.
That's why.
It's Soylent Green. It's people. They get purpley. They get grayish. They get bluish. And it's very Laurel Canyon-ish, very like early 80s, late 70s. You're driving down the strip. And this song is so for that. It's just
Winter,
a good beginning of summer song.
Is this an official submission for Guy's Summer Jam 15?
No, I'm going to give you your official. You're getting one, and it's
okay.
Coming by courtesy of Corey Feldman. That I'm just going to leave you there. Yep, with that.
What the fuck?
With
all right.
That.
Well, let's listen. Let's listen to Summer Breaking. Not an official submission.
No. This is a really slow version of it. Is this at the right speed? No. No. Oh, okay. Oh,
are we listening to this on vinyl?
Yeah, no. Am I dying or having a stroke?
It's the syrup version.
It's a scissor version?
It's chopped and screwed.
It's chopped and screwed.
Oh, Oliver.
Yes, Guy.
Farm to table scissor business. Just you, just me. We could make so much money in just Brooklyn and Echo Park.
Oh, artisanal scissor up.
Yeah.
So it's a great song. It sounds amazing. And yeah, I like this part. This is a good part. All right, on to the next.
All right, Oliver, what are your jams this week?
I've been listening to two different mixes that are based around the same idea. One is by DJ Retmatic from here in Los Angeles, and it's a tribute to Pharrell Williams of the Neptunes that he did for a monthly party that my friend DJ Fatrick puts on called Devil's Pie. And then I can't remember where I found the other one, but it's by this DJ from Europe, DJ Clean, and it's a Best of Neptunes mix. And, you know, I certainly grew up as a DJ in my 20s and 30s playing, or actually, believe it, I guess playing my 30s now. I was in the 30s when Neptunes were big. You know, but a lot of what I was playing in the clubs then was Neptunes tracks. And at the time, in the early 2000s, I wasn't that into the heavy, sort of almost muscular synth sound that they put out. I liked the Neptune stuff that was a little bit more sample-based. It was a little bit more 90s. But listening to this stuff going back now, I really appreciate just the ways in which the Neptunes created this very consistent aesthetic of what their style sounded like. And I've never really understood why it sort of went away, except for the fact that any kind of production style eventually wears its welcome out, and then things flip over. But it's been really fun listening to all this Pharrell and Neptunes. Shout out to Chad Hugo as well. Just to kind of not just revisit this period of the early 2000s when they were at their height, but just the particular sort of shininess and, again, the muscularity of their bass lines. It's kind of fun to drive to.
It's a quadrant.
Yeah, you keep saying that. What does that mean?
Oliver, have you
have
not
you
been here for the past 6 months?
No, he hasn't really, if you think about it, Guy. He really hasn't.
He has
I
been
think
gone.
I must have missed this one where you guys discussed the quadrant things.
I have four quadrants in how I value songs and music in my life, and they have to hit the quadrants.
Okay.
So they can I drive to it?
Okay.
Can I clean to it? Can I work out to it? Can I bang to it? So
wait, is there something that fills all four of those?
There are we're on Pop Rocket, Oliver. This is our show. This is our podcast. Wait, can you see the fingers? That's most every song that I pick is a quadrant.
It's all the quadrants. It's like when you're like a movie, how many quadrants is a movie hitting? Also, sometimes she does substitute put on makeup for clean.
Well, I'm just trying to think of a song I could clean the house to and fuck to, and I don't know if those two things necessarily. I'll have to think about whether or not those things could work together.
Oh, I can give you one.
Yeah.
This is Dangerous by Busta Rhymes.
Okay.
That's a quadrant.
Why by okay. Annie Lennox.
Thank you.
Oliver, I would just like to note that the Pharrell song from the SpongeBob movie is the like song recommended from What's Your Jam that has gotten the most play on my iPhone.
Is it a quadrant? So, is that a cleaning sex
happy?
Driving
song?
Are
you talking about Happy?
No. It's what was that? I can't remember. I brought it up. I can't remember the name of it.
It's called Squeeze Me.
Squeeze me. That's right. Yeah.
So you know I fuck to it.
Oh yeah, saucy.
This was a very rated R episode.
Yeah, not safe for work episode.
Megan, what kind of music do you fuck to?
I do not fuck to music, but I just want, since this is being documented, the record to show that Pharrell is hot as fuck, and I totally let him eat me out.
Okay,
the
alert
same,
the trades.
Pharrell and Miley,
with or without the hat, though.
Okay. With the hat.
With the hat. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I actually use his hat as a diva cup. That's how much of a woman I am.
You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Winter Mitchell, Megan Keister, and Oliver Wang. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks for him for letting us use it. Thanks to Jake Lowenthal, Adam Painter, Alec P1009, Aspen DC, King Duncan 42, Josh Henhen, and Sandrita Vidal for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. Follow us on Instagram at Pop Rocket Podcast. Get in touch with us on Twitter at Pop Rocket. And if you want to follow Megan on Twitter, her Twitter is at Born Feral. And she is very talented and so frequently is included on lists of 18 women you should follow on Twitter because she is funny for a woman.
I don't find it patronizing at all.
Please join our Facebook group and tell us who would be your dream Pop Rocket guest panelist. You never know. Jesse Thorne, with his infinite wisdom, may be able to make it happen at some point in time when Margaret needs to go off and take care of some business like today.
God, I hope it's Sean Young.
We're a production of MaximumFun.org, and our producers are the amazing and very, very missed Colin Anderson and Jennifer Marmor, who's getting shit done every week.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.